The science of devotional service. So that's a very nice translation of that term. Dhamman Bhagavatam. Buddha, please speak. Yadi, if. Na of us, Shrutaye, to hear properly. Shamam, there is the capacity. Yai, by which devotional service. Prasana, being satisfied. Prapanaya, to one who has taken shelter. Dashyati, he will give. Atmanam, himself. Api, even. Ajab, the unborn Supreme Lord. Translation. Please speak about how one engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. If you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics, when a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he would give even his own self to the surrendered soul. Purport. Within the material world, there are two classes of mundane philosophers who present their opinions about the Supreme Lord. This purport here actually goes for about 2 pages. I might ask you to read that, Adam. My voice is a little bit weak. Do you want to just... you can use the microphone. Right? Nice loud voice. You can use it.
Within the material world, there are two classes of mundane philosophers who present their opinions about the Supreme Lord. Some so-called theologians claim that we are infinitely different from God, and therefore they tend to look upon the Lord as something far beyond our power to understand. Such extreme dualistic philosophers outwardly or officially claim to be pious and religious believers in God, but they consider God so much different from that which is within our experience that according to them there is little profit in even trying to discuss the personality or attributes of the Supreme Lord. Such outwardly faithful persons generally take to fruitive activities and gross materialistic sense gratification, being infatuated with the mundane relationships of the material world, which appear under the headings society, friendship and love. The Advaita Vadis, or non-dualistic philosophers, claim that there is no difference between God and the living entity, and that the highest goal of life is to give up our personal existence, which is due to illusion, and merge into the impersonal Brahman effulgence, which is devoid of name, form, paraphernalia, and personality. Thus neither class or speculative philosopher is able to understand the transcendental personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his sublime teaching of Achincha Veda Veda Tattva, or simultaneous oneness and difference, has clearly demonstrated that we are qualitatively one with God, but quantitatively different. God is personal consciousness, and he has his personal form. Similarly, we are also personal consciousness, and ultimately, when liberated, we also have eternal forms. The difference is that the eternal form and personality of the Supreme Lord contain unlimited potency and opulence, whereas our potency and opulence are infinitesimal. We are conscious of our personal body, whereas Lord Krishna, the Absolute Truth, is conscious of everyone's body, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Shetri Gyan Chapimam Vidi Sarva Shetreshu Bharata. But although God is infinitely greater than the living entity, both God and the living entities are eternal personalities with form, activities, and feelings. The Supreme Lord Krishna expands himself into innumerable living entities to enjoy rasas or ecstatic relationships with them. The living entities are part and parcel of Lord Krishna, and they are meant to serve him with love. Although the Supreme Lord is eternally the predominator, and the living entity is eternally the predominated, when the living entity surrenders unto the Lord with a sincere loving attitude, desiring to serve the Lord eternally without the slightest expectation of personal reward for such service, the Lord immediately is pleased. As expressed here by the word prasanna, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so unlimitedly merciful and magnanimous that in his gratitude to such a surrendered and loving servitor, he is immediately inclined to offer anything, even himself, to his surrendered devotee. There are numerous practical, historical examples of this loving propensity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because of the love of Mother Yashoda, child Krishna, in his form as Damodar, surrendered himself to his loving mother and allowed himself to be bound with ropes as a child of punishment. Similarly, feeling indebted to the Pandavas for their intense love for him, Krishna, in his form as Partha Sarathi, happily agreed to drive the chariot of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Similarly, Krishna in Vrindavan is always thinking of ways to satisfy the gopis, who are universally recognized as the most exalted loving devotees of the Lord. Such intense loving feelings exchanged between the Lord and his pure devotees would not be possible were the living entities not qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and indeed inseparable parts and parcels of the Lord. On the other hand, because both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities are eternally individuals, each with his own eternal individual consciousness, such loving exchanges are a perpetual reality in the kingdom of God. In other words, absolute oneness with God and absolute difference from God are theoretical imaginations of different schools of speculative philosophy. The perfection of spiritual love, as described in this verse, is based on simultaneous oneness and difference, and this absolute reality was elaborately presented by Lord Krishna himself in his brahminical incarnation as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have expounded this perfect doctrine in innumerable books, culminating in the teachings of his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who has most perfectly presented this knowledge in a way that is understandable not only in India but to all the people of the world. Our present insignificant attempt is simply to complete his translation and commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, and we are constantly praying for his guidance so that his work can simply be completed exactly as he would have desired. If one can understand these teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as they are being presented in Western languages, surely the Lord will be satisfied with such a sincere seeker of spiritual truth.
Translation again. Please speak about how one engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord if you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics. When a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. So this is the part of the first question, really. There are 9 questions that will be asked by Mahārāja-Dhimmi. And this is the first question was, what is the ultimate good, which was in text number 30. And this is part of the same question. I think over about 5 chapters, the various questions are asked and the various answers are given. Here, it's interesting how he says, if you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics, please speak if you consider me capable of properly hearing. We see also in the purport with Sridhananda Swami. Sridhananda Swami and the others who helped to edit these purports and to translate these Sanskrit verses. They're very, very scholarly devotees. They're great devotees, great scholars. I don't know if anyone's ever heard some of the classes by Sridhananda Maharaj. He has a very sharp intelligence, able to cut through illusion, just like that. Once when I was in Mayapur, I heard him give some philosophical discourses about the all the Western philosophers, going back, describing how modern Western philosophy is based upon, certain people, Plato and Socrates and, the ones before them, and, how their philosophy sort of developed and what have you. And, of course, how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is the ultimate philosophy in comparison to these. So he's a very, very scholarly devotee, both in devotional literatures and in Western literatures. And yet he is praying to Śrīla Prabhupāda that you please allow us to complete this task in a way that's satisfying to you. Very, very important. This work can simply be completed exactly as he would have desired. So that's a really important statement there, because many scholars who would have taken up this task would have immediately have desired to present their own scholastic abilities somehow. That yes, that you watch the way I tackle these purports of the Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. But he didn't do that. I believe that, from my understanding, when he began to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam, he started from the 11th canto. That's why the purports are quite long. And then I think the GBC asked him to, if we want to get it finished, we may have to shorten the purports a bit. And therefore, you see that the purports became a lot shorter. And then, especially as he did the 10th canto. But in this 11th canto, you see that as he began, the purports are quite long. But still, he is the wonderful way that he presented the Srimad Bhagavatam was that, you know, how would Srila Prabhupada have liked this to have been presented exactly in that way? That's the way we shall do it. So it's a very, very important mood. It's a mood that every single devotee, whether they're a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, or a disciple of a disciple, or in years to come, whether they're a, you know, great, 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 great grand disciple, they should still have that mood to follow the Adi Guru. Srila Prabhupada had that ability to present Krishna consciousness according to the capability. He had the ability to present Krishna consciousness so that it was easily accessible to the people of this world now and for thousands of years to come. That's what, for us, it's astounding that so many people around the world read Srila Prabhupada's books in so many different cultures, so many different countries, and they can all relate to his purpose. That in itself is remarkable. But when you consider that in 100 years from now, that those purports will still be appreciated, and in 1,000 years from now, people all over the world will still appreciate up to about 10,000 years. And of course, after about 10,000 years, which is the age of the Sankirtan movement, gradually as the Sankirtan movement disappears and Kali Yuga takes over, and people have no appreciation of devotional service whatsoever, then Kali Yuga will fully take effect for everyone. Very dangerous. And of course it just gets so wild that at the end of Kali Yuga, the Kalki avatar comes in and just slaughters everyone. You can imagine him. I was actually laying in bed last night thinking about that Kalki, you know, this great warrior riding in on a horse, big sword, cutting everyone down. Because people will be, at the end of the Kali Yuga, they will have no, there'll be no devotees, no devotional sentiments. And even after about 10,000 years, people will have lost the ability to actually understand anything about devotional service. But while there is people understanding, it is that understanding will be based upon Srila Prabhupada's purports. So even though things become very, very, very degraded in years to come, you know, many, many thousands of years, these purports are still accessible. Very accessible. So, Srila Prabhupada had that ability. He was empowered by the Lord to write in such a way. And of course, Srila Sridharananda Maharaj, he also did the same because he had that desire to execute devotional service exactly as Srila Prabhupada would have liked. And this is the, in some ways, people criticize the ISKCON movement as if some higher philosophy wasn't presented. And yet, you know, if you read through the Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there's certainly so much there that is, you know, only understood by Bhava Bhaktas and Prema Bhaktas. There's so much there. And really, unless you're a Bhava Bhakta and a Prema Bhakta, you won't understand it. You get there some, you know, little intellectual appreciation. Oh, there's something wonderful there, but I can't really grasp it. But on the platform of Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, it becomes very, very relishable and very tangible to one's realization. So there's so much there. But the major proportion of Srila Prabhupada's purports and commentaries are in such a way as to help people, the general mass of people, take the devotional service, and certainly for the devotees who are practicing full-time devotional service, for them to understand everything that they need to know in order to practice devotional service and become pure devotees and become Bhava Bhaktas and Prema Bhaktas, that is, everything is there. And for the Bhava Bhaktas and Prema Bhaktas, everything is there for them. So there's nothing lacking. But what Srila Prabhupada, the strength of this movement, is that Srila Prabhupada didn't just try to cheaply attract people. That you know, people generally want something very cheap. That yes, you can become a really advanced devotee very quickly, a really advanced bhakta of Radha Krishna. You can be a great lover of Radha Krishna, practically on a transcendental platform, absorbed in rasa and absorbed in ecstatic mellows. Very quickly, very easily. Prabhupada didn't present Krishna consciousness like that. He actually presented that in order to take up devotional service, one should hear about the process from the bona fide spiritual master and should serve the spiritual master, and gradually, as one serves the spiritual master, and hears more and more, one becomes more and more qualified for more confidential knowledge, more confidential understanding, and then as one practices devotional service with that more and more confidential understanding, practices devotional service of a very pure nature, one becomes more and more qualified like that. I was listening to a tape the other day. Well, I listen to one every day, but I was listening to one the other day, and especially if you hear Srila Prabhupada's conversations, you quite often get people pushing Srila Prabhupada to answer particular questions of which they're not actually qualified to hear the answer. Now, sometimes, I know, especially with Srila Prabhupada's disciples, if they were not qualified to hear, he would sometimes answer them and go in to describe some of the, for instance, someone was asking Srila Prabhupada, you know, is this in the spiritual world? Is that in the spiritual world? And someone asked, you know, is there anxiety and, you know, grief in the spiritual world? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, that's a very intelligent question, but you're not really qualified to hear the answer. But although, but because he was his disciple, he, and, you know, there are other disciples there, he actually went on and he explained a little bit, just for a few minutes. He didn't get carried away with it, but he explained a little bit about the mood of separation between, you know, Radha and Krishna and Mother Yasoda and Krishna, and Krishna goes out herding the cows, and in this way described as some grief, some separation, but it was all the cause of increasing transcendental bliss and ecstasy. But then, you know, and then he said, because you've asked, I've answered that you're not really qualified to hear, so, but if you keep chanting Hare Krishna, performing devotional service, then one day you will be qualified. So Srila Prabhupada was perfectly equipped to give that knowledge. He was absorbed in that, those rasas from morning till night. But the disciples were not qualified to hear, and therefore he gave them a bit of a taste according to their qualification, and then quickly went back to what he thought they really needed to hear about. And similarly, I heard another lecture where there was someone who was asking some very, very... someone who'd actually studied Sanskrit, studied the Bhagavad Gita, studied many editions of the Bhagavad Gita, and then studied Srila Prabhupada's edition. So he was obviously well read, and yet he said to Srila Prabhupada, there's one thing that I can't quite, you know, get my mind on. When they describe the spiritual world, are they talking about an analogy? Is it some symbology, or is there something really there? You know, here's someone who's studied many Vedic literatures, but really hasn't got the qualification to hear or to study and need the spiritual master to bring them. So Srila Prabhupada said, his first answer was, well, first I will have to elevate you to the platform of common sense. And then you'll be able to understand. So, because this person was pushing, you know, for the answer, you know, is the spiritual world. But Srila Prabhupada actually didn't describe the spiritual world. He went back to the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and described Dehina Shminita Dehe Komuram Yogaramjara Tata Dehantara Tati Tera Tatra Namuvite. As, you know, as the embodied soul travels in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly the soul, you know, passes another body at the time of death. So, Srila Prabhupada spent a long time trying to help that person to understand that the nature of spirit is indestructible. And there are many verses in that second chapter where it describes spirit by nature is indestructible. And in this way, he helped that gentleman to understand, therefore, if there's a spiritual world, it also has the same qualities. So by common sense, you know, you've read Bhagavad Gita, but because there's no common sense, you should understand that if the spirit soul, something made of spirit, is eternal and indestructible, then the same would apply to the spiritual world. It's not such a, you know, why would it be just some analogy that there couldn't be any eternal spiritual world, right? It's just a common sense type of a jump. So, in this way, because the person hadn't really even assimilated the first lessons of the Bhagavad Gita, they were not qualified to assimilate more difficult lessons. And that's the nature of, you know, a spiritual teacher, anyone who preaches actually in Krishna consciousness, is that they, whoever we're speaking to, we have the responsibility to very quickly assess you know, what a person has assimilated and what they haven't assimilated. And according to what they have not assimilated, we should not therefore give instruction of something which they will just not be able to. It doesn't matter how long you speak or how many different analogies or what, how much shastra you back it up with, they will not understand it if they haven't assimilated the first essential understanding of the Bhagavad Gita, or what is the difference between matter and spirit. And it's one of the first things I quite often do when I sit down and I talk to someone, and you can see they want to have a bit of a philosophical discussion. They want to, quite often people, they don't want to, when people sit down to discuss philosophy, they don't want to see what you know. They want to see how much they can defeat you. That's a fact. They're not there to listen to you. You know, here you see the difference where this Vasudev, right? He's speaking to Narada here. And then Narada narrates the story of the nine Yogendras, that's right. So here Vasudev saying that if you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics, you know, please speak. So you see that's the proper attitude. You know, you speak according to what you perceive that I'm capable of understanding. You help me to elevate to the next platform. But people aren't in that mood. They're thinking, you know, I've come to ask you a question to show my superiority over you. That's what they do. And there's a lot of false ego. The worst thing you can do, of course, is to then, when you meet someone like that, is to then try and show them how much you know, because that's not going to do them any good, nor is it going to do you any good, nor is it going to do the movement any good. I always ask them one question, which they can never answer. I usually let them spout off a little bit, and then I ask them, you know, what's the difference between matter and spirit? And that's it. It just stops them dead. You try sometimes. They start spluttering out, you know, all these, and they just have no answer. A very simple question, and for all their philosophy, it's very rare you find someone who can just give you a simple answer. In fact, that was a question also that Srila Prabhupada asked that particular gentleman who wanted to know about the spiritual world. So he wants to know, you know, is it just some symbology or what have you? And Srila Prabhupada asked, you know, first, what is the difference between matter and spirit? Because obviously the understanding was there, and then okay, let's go back to that. When we understand that, then we can gradually go to other things. You know, what to speak of very, very advanced topics. Here we see that Vasudev, although actually presenting himself in a very humble way, he says, when the living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. So although he's certainly presenting himself in a very humble way, he's actually very, very elevated in transcendental knowledge, because his next comment sums up the essence of Krishna consciousness, the essence of any of the rasas. Just like the you know, the brahmana who was asked by his spiritual master to read the Bhagavad Gita, and he said that I cannot read, and the spiritual master said, no, you read the Bhagavad Gita. And so he tried to, you know, read the Bhagavad Gita anyway. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happened to come by, and he saw this devotee reading the Bhagavad Gita, tears pouring from his eyes, static symptoms. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking, you know, which particular verse you read which is giving you such ecstatic symptoms. And he said, actually, I cannot read. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, how is it that you are, you know, shedding so many tears? And he said, I'm just looking at this picture on the front where Krishna, although he's the Supreme Lord, he agrees to become Arjuna's servant, his chariot driver, and that is the love between the Lord and the living entity. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him and said that you have actually understood the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. So you see there Vasudeva making a similar statement, that when a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. So therefore a personality like Vasudeva, in his question, in one sense, out of natural humility, he is certainly asking, the proper etiquette, that you please explain devotional service to me, what I should be hearing, not what I would like to hear. So that is the proper mood, the proper humility. Sometimes, as devotees, we see also as our congregation grows bigger and bigger and bigger, we have to be a little careful as to what we are teaching people, what example we're setting, what questions are being asked, and how they're being answered. Just because a question is asked doesn't mean it should be answered. If you're with a group of congregational members and they ask some really nice questions about elevated topics, doesn't mean you should answer them. Because it describes in the 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam the description, the 10th canto, 20th chapter, description of autumn, that devotees are like waterfalls. Sometimes they flow and sometimes they stop. If the audience is qualified, the waterfall will flow. And if the audience is not, they will just decide not to speak on that subject or not to speak at all. And that's how devotees should behave. Not that just because someone asks a question that we say, oh, it's a good question, we just pour out a whole lot of information. Because what happens is that people do want to take things cheaply, and sometimes people, by asking questions and pushing for a topic to go into, Krishna's leelas and what have you, it appears that, this is a very elevated devotee. You can see that their consciousness, is on a much higher level. And sometimes people want to give that impression, but they're not. They're still very, very much fixed in the bodily conception of life. That on a daily basis, completely absorbed in the body. And there's no question of spiritual emotions for someone who's absorbed in the bodily concept of life. There's no question. But that show of hearing and talking about elevated pastimes, that's all it is. It's just an affectation, they call it. And it should not be indulged in. And of course, the danger also is that within many different meetings of devotees, there are also many new people. And if the new people, if they're sitting there and they're thinking, oh, to be advanced, you've got to have an understanding of all these, pastimes of Radha Krishna and be able to, spin off all these different intimate stories and what have you, and ask these questions about 10th canto and so many things, then appears you're, somewhere up the top there as advanced devotees. And that's what the new people think. And therefore the new people start to, they come to Krishna consciousness and they get a foolish idea that, yeah, let's rush into the these elevated topics and that's how you become advanced. So that's a very bad impression that we can give. Whereas what we should be doing is teaching people, first, making them fixed in that understanding. Fixed up. I'm not the body. Really fixed up in that. Not just some intellectual understanding. Fixed up. No doubt. From so many different angles of vision. On a daily basis, people are fixed in their consciousness. I am not this body. And I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And the prime way to vija vadajivanam, the prime method of transcendental realization, is through the holy name of the Lord. We hear the holy name of the Lord, we hear different topics. Then, when we hear the different topics of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, in conjunction with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, we'll actually get some realization. If we absorb ourselves in the books without practical service to Srila Prabhupada's movement, that sort of study will not yield realization. One can, you know, the books are available. One can go up to the shop there, buy all the books, and can have all the books at home, and they can read them from morning to night. But if they don't engage in practical service to Srila Prabhupada, the realization of even the first lessons, I'm not this body, will not actually properly manifest. So there has to be that practical service, rising early, chanting 16 rounds, following four regulatory principles, worshipping the deities, serving the devotees, cleanliness, you know, motor goodness. These morning evening program, one sadhana, some practical service towards the preaching movement, then, by Krishna's grace, the realization will come. And one should also that combination of reading Srila Prabhupada's books and practical service. But Prabhupada stated on a couple of occasions, more important than reading is hearing. Reading is also hearing. When we read Srila Prabhupada's books, in one sense we're also hearing. We're actually doing Shravanam Kirtanam. We're actually doing Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam. If we do that without sufficient reciprocation with devotees, hearing from devotees, even our reading will not produce the proper realizations. There needs to be practical service, hearing, a lot of hearing from devotees, and reading. And that's a really good combination. You'll see actually a lot of devotees that will actually, in order to somehow espouse their advanced position, think that, all right, doing the hard work or practical, you know, all the service I have to do, we'll forget that. I'll just read the books, get a whole lot of knowledge, and then people will know that I'm actually advanced. But it doesn't work like that, because you can't actually jump over the process. Without the hearing from devotees, even though you read so much, you get a sort of, you know, you won't have a sense of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita, describing the association with devotees, how important it is. And he describes there that when you associate with devotees and hear from devotees, you actually get a sense of Krishna consciousness. Right? In the same way that if you wanted to be a mechanic, you could read a manual and what have you, but if you just, you know, if you associate with mechanics, or if you wanted to, you know, learn to ride horses, you know, you can read a book and you can certainly learn things, but you know, just very quickly by associating with people who are, you know, horse people from many generations, you get a real sense of, you know, what you're supposed to be doing, picking it up, the dangers and the pitfalls and what have you. So that sense of Krishna consciousness, having everything in its proper perspective, comes from hearing from devotees and doing the practical work, and also coupling that with reading. So that's our process, and that's what we should teach people. Whenever we have an opportunity and we're speaking Krishna consciousness, when people leave us, they should have that clear understanding. If we've preached for an hour to someone and they've gone away and they haven't understood that, you know, it's important to hear from devotees to pick up the general sense of Krishna consciousness, that the books are good but you can't quite understand it by yourself, we haven't preached very well. If they haven't understood that you can't just be a devotee by intellectually studying these books, you actually have to do some practical service, again, you know, you've missed an opportunity to give them the main points and for them to understand clearly the distinction between matter and spirit. These things, basically, when we speak to people, they should get some sort of an idea. If we sit down with them and discuss so much philosophy, it can go on for hours, but if the essential things are there, then we've not really preached very well, very effectively. And in many cases, we're actually giving people the wrong impression that Krishna consciousness is a place for philosophical debate. If you want a philosophical debate, here, go and sit down with devotees and we'll just talk philosophy all day, what have you like that. Or, you know, the Krishna consciousness, they're all absorbed in, you know, this Radha Krishna Bhava, like this. People should understand that the main thing that they should be doing is chanting Hare Krishna, doing some practical service, hearing from devotees, and if they do that, they're actually situated properly, safely, soundly in spiritual life. And they're the main things. Whenever people, you know, we have the opportunity, the people come and see us, they're the main things we should give them. It's very easy to speak for an hour, even more, with people, and they go away and they haven't got a clue about those important things. And we may feel that, oh, we've given them such advanced knowledge, we've had a really good philosophical debate, but we've given them not much. And in many cases, we can actually be misguiding people by not clearly defining these basics. And that is the beauty of Srila Prabhupada. If you look at all his lectures, look at all his purports, look at all his conversations, Srila Prabhupada just targeted the audience, and the main thing that audience needed to know, you know, he pushed it strongly, but in a very in a wonderful way. Same message. Just because we're giving the same message doesn't mean that it has to be that we just say the same thing every time. If you hear Srila Prabhupada, he'll give one example and he might give it 100 times, and each time he says that example you pick up the main point and there's a little slightly different nuance, something a little extra he always adds, you know, if you like that, always something wonderful. In everything Srila Prabhupada did, he had that ability to bring people back to those main points. So for instance, we're reading in the Transcendental Adventure, when Srila Prabhupada came to Melbourne in 1974, the reporters, they came and they did a story, and for the Sun, the Herald Sun, it's a newspaper which doesn't exist anymore. I think the Age bought it out or something. Maybe it's still going, but I think it got bought out. Still going?
Herald Sun.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is. Okay. All right. The Herald Sun. Okay. I think. No, I think what they used to be was the Sun and the Herald. That's now it's the Herald Sun. Because I used to, when I was about 8, I used to sell newspapers, you know, on the street. You know, it was at 6 o'clock in the morning as the cars went by. They don't do that anymore, do they? No. So there was the Sun and the Herald. Now it's the Herald Sun. Anyway, so they did an article, and Srila Prabhupada was explaining that if you miss the opportunity in the human form of life, you can actually take birth as an animal. And the next day they reported in the Sun, the Herald Sun, that Swami is thinking of, is contemplating dying soon and taking birth again as an animal. So, later in the Srimad Bhagavatam class that morning, they actually showed Srila Prabhupada that article. And Srila Prabhupada said that he was explaining the Vedic conception that you can become an animal. He said they obviously, you know, didn't like that comment, but it's a fact. He said, actually, and then they said, Swami will become a dog, you know, like this, that's what he was saying. He said, the pseudo-swamis, they will become a dog. That's a fact. He said, actually, we're not, it doesn't worry us to become animals if we're Krishna's animals. You know, if we go back to the spiritual world and he said to be an animal in the spiritual world is not an ordinary thing. It's a very glorious, you know, very, very wonderful thing. And there's, that, you know, that'd be a wonderful benediction. And anyway, he was also explaining a little later on in the evening, people were still talking about the article and, you know, how sort of derogatory it was. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, there's so much benefit there. And he said that, you know, my spiritual master saw that how many times the name Krishna appeared, then that is the success of that article. So one of the devotees quickly counted, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, you know, how many times that? He said, 17. So Srila Prabhupada said, so how many people in Melbourne? I said, about a couple of million. You know, how many people would read that paper? Oh, about 2 million. Okay, 17 times 2 million, 17, you know, 17 times 2 million that they chanted Krishna's name. But, anyway, the next day, or a couple of days later, Srila Prabhupada did a program at the town hall here in Melbourne, and there were some really nice questions. There was one person there that was asking a question that they were from a particular sect, a particular yoga group, that their guru actually claimed to be God. And Srila Prabhupada sort of understood where the question was coming from. And this person asked a question that in the Bhagavad Gita it says that in the whenever there is a decline in religious principles that I descend myself in human form. So the hidden thing behind that was that, you know, that proves that our guru is God. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, the Supreme Lord appears in the form of his holy name. And this person pushed, no. What, he says you appear in his human form. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, Guru is non-different from God. Guru is God in human form. He is non-different because he is a confidential servant of God. Anyway, the next question that was asked was, someone asked about, you know, what do you think about that article that was in the Sun the other day? Srila Prabhupada said, "Oh, the animal did not understand." So then Srila Prabhupada explained, he said that sometimes when a man is deaf, he calls to his wife for dinner. "I'm ready for dinner now." And when he calls, the wife answers, "I'm just now coming." Because he's deaf, he thinks she didn't call back. So he says, "Oh, she's deaf, you know, she just can't hear me." So it's the other way around. He's deaf, he's thinking that she's deaf. So because this man was an animal, that he's thinking other people are like that. So Srila Prabhupada gave that example. But it's sort of it's an example of how in so many different ways that point, that Vedic point, that, you know, human form of life, if you don't take advantage of it, take the devotional service, you can, you know, become an animal. And Srila Prabhupada presented that, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam class to the reporters, in the, you know, conversation at night, and again in the town hall, all in different ways, in such a way that it was, you know, very, very pleasing to people. But that's how he preached, you know, somehow or another. It's the same message, make it attractive to the audience, right? That don't become an animal in your next life, take to devotional service, chant Hare Krishna, understand you're not this body, take shelter of the spiritual master, hear submissively, hear what you need to hear, not what you think what you want to hear, and hear from someone who's qualified. These are very important things, and although we're basically going to tell everyone the same message, we should be prepared to do that, you know, as it is fit. But for each and every time we do it, because the devotee is enjoying the nectar themselves of the intimate relationship between the spiritual master, the Supreme Lord, all the acharyas, they know that every time they speak that simple message, that all the acharyas, they're dancing in the spiritual world. You know, they're just in ecstasy. Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they're in ecstasy. Oh, here he is preaching properly the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. She is preaching properly like this. They are giving the impression of the holy name. Yes, chant the holy name. Take shelter of the spiritual master. Hear properly. Give up your false pride. When that sort of preaching is done properly, the acharyas are in ecstasy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda are dancing, the demigods are dancing, Srimati Radharani is very pleased, you get the blessing. And the devotee knows that, and therefore he's in ecstasy. And that ecstasy comes out in the way that they preach, even these... it never becomes hackneyed. You can preach that same message millions of times and it will never become happy for the devotee. They're always in ecstasy and they're always getting ever fresh realizations about the same things. And gradually, as the audiences of course become more and more qualified, then the devotees also have opportunities to preach more and more confidential topics, which is also very relishable. So I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments? Just read the verse again. Please speak about how one engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord if you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics. When a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. Questions?
I would only want to comment. We have to learn from Vasudevji how humble he is. in asking those questions in our mind.
Yes.
He's most qualified, yet he thinks whether he's qualified or not.
That's
whether
right.
The question lies, yeah. Whether he should ask these questions, and what he should hear.
In his statement, someone who was proud would just think, oh, he's asking a question and he's obviously, not very qualified. Someone who is proud would see like that and therefore see Vasudeva as someone not very qualified. Someone who's actually very advanced would see the other part of his statement and the first part and see that in all of it, they're a very, very advanced person. And once one devotee actually asked Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj that why is it if, hearing from advanced devotees is so important, why is it that the Lord makes it so that, they're hard to recognise because of their humility? Because devotees, although they're very, very advanced, here Vasudeva, he's asking this very humble question, if you think I'm qualified to hear a little bit about devotional service, perhaps you could tell me like that. Ordinarily you think, he's not very advanced, but obviously the teacher is. So most people could not recognise Vasudeva's status, and that's actually the case with most advanced devotees. It's very, very difficult to recognise who they are. And someone asked Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, if the process of devotional service is completely dependent upon the mercy of those great devotees and hearing from them and taking shelter of them, why has Krishna made it so hard to recognize them? Because they're disguised with these qualities of humility. And he said that the answer is in this second part of his verse here, that because Krishna actually is the property of his devotees, that if that devotee looks kindly upon someone, Krishna becomes obliged to give himself also to that person. So therefore, Krishna hides the qualities, the greatness of the devotees. Because if an elevated devotee speaks, looks, just glances. We see Srila Prabhupada with his many disciples and many devotees, wonderful devotees in ISKCON. Their presence, their glance, is enough to invoke Radha Krishna's mercy. And Krishna knows that, so therefore he's very, very careful not to reveal the elevated position of those, because Krishna then becomes obligated to those people that those devotees are glancing at, speaking to, bestowing their mercy upon. But if Krishna decides that there is some sincerity, especially with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he reveals to that person to understand the nature of the devotee, then the person appreciates, gee, that person's actually, I thought, I mistook their humility for being unqualified, but actually now I see that, that person's, humility has nothing, they're actually really advanced in so many different ways. So when Krishna then reveals that to a person, then that person can fully take shelter of that devotee, and then they get the full blessings of Krishna.
Sorry, thank you for the great call. I really appreciate it. I have to call your attention.
Yes.
Is King Mimi today? He's still visiting your game.
At this stage? Okay. Yeah, King Vidya, yeah, that's right, from text number 28, that's right, yeah. Thanks for that.
Sorry.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Any other questions? comments or questions?